This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, there were some quite interesting scenes in the Knesset yesterday with Itamar Ben-Gvir, who, of course, is head of the Otzma Yehudit party, dishing out baklava on the floor of the Knesset after the first reading of the vote, which is proposed to enable the death penalty to be imposed upon terrorists, convicted terrorists in Israel. We don't currently have a law like that. The only death penalty possibility in Israel, which is now kind of not even relevant anymore, relates to people who have been convicted of perpetrating the Shoah, the Holocaust. And it's only ever been invoked once in Israel's history, which, of course, was the trial of Adolf Eichmann. That's the only time that the death penalty has been invoked in Israel. And now it is proposed that terrorists, and, of course, specifically under the current circumstances, Hamas terrorists, will be liable to be sentenced to death if they are convicted of terror activities. Of course, there are lots and lots of details about exactly what the terror activity should be. And, you know, it's obviously quite a detailed law. But I just wonder what listeners think about this idea and whether it's important that we have the possibility of the death sentence in Israel to be able to impose upon convicted terrorists. The arguments to and fro are, on the one hand, obviously, people are thinking that all the time that we have murderers in our jails, and they are potential pawns to be used in exchange deals, as we've seen over the past few months, where many, many convicted terrorists, people who have murdered Israelis, who've been sitting in Israeli jails because, of course, the death sentence is not applicable, and have now been released because of the exchange agreement that was entered to as part of the ceasefire in Gaza, have now been released to potentially go and commit terror and to murder again. So if we have the death sentence, then that possibility is completely removed. On the other hand, if we do need to have tools to extract prisoners or Israelis who have been kept hostage or whatever the circumstances are, then potentially we won't have anything to give back. And therefore, the question is, I mean, we have to envisage a situation where the death sentence won't necessarily remove the possibility that Israelis will be held hostage or be held as prisoners of war, and we will need to have ways to bargain them back to freedom again, and we won't have that. So that is the kind of counter-argument to the idea of the death sentence. Interestingly, the ultra-Orthodox parties are voting against this because they feel that it contradicts our Jewish principles, that sentencing people to death is not halachically acceptable, and they feel, therefore, that the State of Israel should not allow the death sentence to be imposed even on terrorists, people who have committed murder and who have committed acts of terror. What do you guys think?
What did bother me, of course, is Itamar Ben-Gvir, the whole handing out things. That suddenly appears on all the Israel haters' Twitter accounts, you know, just to show how evil, you know, that we claim that they hand out sweets when there's an attack. And now, look, in Parliament, they're handing out sweets. He just continues to give currency and to give fuel to fuel the anti-Semites. And I'm not saying that they would love us were it not for him. Of course not. We know that full well. But why does he have to make their life so much easier? I just keep wondering.
Unfortunately, Itamar Ben-Gvir is extremely controversial, and even more so when we hear some of the testimonies of the hostages who were kept in Gaza for 2 years. And some of them were saying that when Ben-Gvir came onto the TV and they saw him from Gaza, from the war zone in Gaza, when he came onto the TV and he was showing the cameras how Palestinian prisoners were being very, very harshly treated in Israeli prisons. Our own hostages said that they suffered abuse, greater abuse, at the hands of their captors because of what Ben-Gvir was announcing to the cameras. So he directly, by fueling this and trying to be, to create this bravado in front of the cameras to show that we will not be compromised and we will be uncompromising in our treatment of Palestinians who have been arrested justifiably because of their involvement in the events of October the 7th and beyond that, and probably required to be treated pretty harshly. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to go in front of the cameras to advertise that fact. And the fact that he did that created greater hardships for our hostages in Gaza. And this fact was actually brought to his attention at the time. And people said to him, don't do this because you are undoubtedly going to create difficulties for our hostages in Gaza. He didn't seem to be too bothered about that.
Lovely. All right. Let's talk about the Commission of Inquiry. So Netanyahu has claimed that half the country is opposed to a state commission of inquiry into the war. What does that mean?
He thinks, well, therefore it means to him that he's not obliged to create a state commission of inquiry into this war. And with the return of our hostages, and we hope in the near future, the four remaining bodies of those Israelis and one foreign worker whose bodies still remain in Gaza, who have been killed and whose bodies have been taken into Gaza, we hope that they will return. But with all of that now coming to an end, it allows the Israeli public to focus on some different issues, because that really has occupied every part of our agenda over the last 2 years: fighting the war, surviving the war, creating a safe zone for Israelis to live in, and bringing our hostages home almost at any price. And we, I feel, are now moving to where we have created that. We feel much safer in our country now as a result of some of the changes and some of the fantastic work that the IDF have done over the last 2 years. Our hostages have almost all come home, and we won't take our eye off the ball until the last four bodies are returned. But it does allow the national agenda to shift a little bit and to encapsulate other issues. And now comes the moment where we have to look back and say, how did this happen? What weaknesses were there, and how can we try to avoid those in the future? How can we learn from these lessons? Now, the IDF have been through a whole series of investigations, and in fairness, almost every single flashpoint on October the 7th and beyond that has been investigated. There have been investigations into each and every kibbutz, how the kibbutz was attacked, how the security was unable to hold back, where were the IDF reinforcements at the moment that they were needed, how were terrorists allowed to get into these kibbutz homes, how come it was that the safety rooms turned out to be not quite so safe on the kibbutzim. A lot of that has been investigated in a very kind of detailed way on the ground. The thing that's missing right now is the political level investigation, the bigger picture. How was it that we were so unprepared on October the 7th? How was it that the intelligence that we received was dismissed? How was it that the government had made decisions just before the holiday of Simchat Torah about deployment of IDF forces in different parts of Israel? And how was it that ultimately the Gaza border was left so unattended that this catastrophe could happen? And it is one of the greatest catastrophes in Israel's history. There can be little doubt about that. And therefore, one would imagine that a state commission of inquiry is absolutely obvious. There should be really little doubt about the fact that an event like this is a classic example of when a state commission of inquiry is really required. And yet, the Prime Minister and those around him are opposing the idea of a state commission of inquiry at every possible junction. And the Prime Minister's latest statement that half the country doesn't want a state of commission inquiry also means that the half the country does. And if half the country does want a state of commission of inquiry, I think that that is certainly justification. But I think there are greater points that fully justify, and not only fully justify, but absolutely require a state commission of inquiry. So my view is that even if a state commission of inquiry is not established at this particular point or under this current government, because don't forget that elections will be due in Israel within the next year or 18 months. And so even if the current government does not allow the establishment of a state commission of inquiry, it is inevitable. There will almost certainly be a state commission of inquiry now or at a later point. And that we will really need to know exactly whether those anti-protests, anti-government protests that preceded the war had any impact at all on what happened during the war, as the government sometimes likes to point out, that those anti-government protests really precipitated the war, allowed this to happen, whether that's the case or not, whether there were decisions that were made in the government that were really negligent in not being able to prevent this war. One thing that we can be certain about is that the power that the IDF had and have was enough in order to repel an attack of the nature that was perpetrated on October the 7th. And that is one of the things that we can really take some heart from, how the IDF recovered from a very weak position to regain control of the situation and to re-secure the borders. But I feel that a state commission of inquiry is an absolute must and is ultimately inevitable.
So I've got well, first of all, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly about needing a state inquiry, but I think that it's going to reveal something very, very different. And I'm surprised that Netanyahu doesn't want it. And I'll tell you my thoughts, that the more I follow this and read about it and look into it, which has been pretty much a full-time thing for a couple of years now, is my concern is that if we go back right to the beginning and we talk about the need for judicial reform, I think that there has been a left, secular, anti-government, and I'm going to use the word in inverted commas, takeover of many facets of Israeli political and security environment. So we know it's happened on the judiciary, but also in terms perhaps of some of the security areas, the intelligence, a lot of these decisions about October 7th, even though they were given information to say Hamas is planning something, many of these decisions, many of the facts were discounted because it was thought it would never happen and Hamas would never do that. Almost an assumption that everybody wants peace. And I imagine that a commission of inquiry would open up a very maybe more dangerous, and maybe that's why could be one of the reasons, ironically, Netanyahu is avoiding it, is I think it would open up a fragmentation and expose a fragmentation of Israeli society between left, right, religious, non-religious. And we see this. We see a disproportionate number of religious kids, boys, who have died in this war because secular Israelis have often gone to non-combat units, maybe intelligence. And I wonder if a commission of inquiry would expose that which has potentially added to the causes of this war. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that a commission of inquiry would really need to go as deeply as possible into some of the cracks and divides in Israeli society to identify to what extent they were responsible for the weakness and the catastrophe that happened on October the 7th. I have little doubt that the only reason that the prime minister is opposing this is because it's not going to be good news for him. That I don't think he cares about 50% of the country one way or the other. He's just using that as a tool to somehow justify why he's not going to allow this. But ultimately, if it was going to show him in a good light, I'm sure that he would support it. The fact that he's not supporting it to me indicates that he is sure that it will not. But I agree, Howard, and I think to some degree, I would actually quite like that dangerous element, if, as you call it, to be exposed, because I think that we need to know this. We need to know what the facts are rather than what the hearsay is and what the political spin is on things. Did the judicial protest movement contribute anything towards the situation? Was the government weakened? Was the government's eye taken off the ball at the time? To what extent? Why did the government decide to proceed with these judicial reforms at that time? I think all of this needs to be exposed, and I think that all the harsh facts need to come out in order for us to learn lessons to move forward. So I'm not going to take up any more time. I know we've run over quite significantly, but I think there is a lot to be discussed about this, and there are a lot of issues that will come out, and it won't be pretty, and it won't be easy.
Well, nor was October 7th, and nor was what followed. So that's my thoughts on it. Give me yours, 0618951019. Do you think it is still relevant? Have things changed so much on the ground that there's no value in it? Share your thoughts with us. It's 8:02.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.